Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is episode 4 of The Accidental Quantum Physicist, and I'm sort of glad that I explained to you in episode 1 the accident of you hearing such a variable quality podcast, the accident which got me into podcasting, and the accidents, I suppose, or the haphazard way that I actually became a quantum physicist, in a series of misspent summer in year 10, the third last year of school, before school, sort of interaction with a lamp which changed colour, a long summer on a supercomputer looking for the fabled classical electron, and instead falling through into the sort of Alice in Wonderland world of quantum physics, where I went through it. But stepping back a little while, you'll hear some traffic noise and me walking, and it's again from episode 1, is that need for rehabilitation, stretching oneself all the time, physically as well as mentally, or actually physically and mentally together. They actually work side by side, or I think my mental stuff helps with my physical stuff, but the physical activity of walking and talking at the same time is one aspect. So I'm actually will be doing a recovery walk, and one of the things is I'll improve the microphone. The microphone I do have at the moment is a bit wind sensitive. It's a dead still night. You couldn't ask for a stiller, more chilly night. So you'll hear the noise, and you'll probably hear my footfall, and I'll try and speak well. Now, the other aspect to it is that trying to up the ante in rehab, I just pump these podcasts out, and I went to a podcast conference and listened to all these sorts of more complicated things. Very impressed, but my thing is to get as much practice within a day as possible. And this is the fourth podcast on this topic in a day. And I've done a reading from New Scientist at the same time. So the idea is to pump them out, and in order to pump them out, I've been written up the software and everything just to pump them out. Low quality as it is, there's an ability to sort of write some intelligence into the software eventually to remove noise and do a little bit of automated post-production stuff, but I really can't afford to put the time in. And sort of similarly to this, of just pushing yourself, I've been mucking around with micro USB cables on the sensors in between this, to see if I can make the ultimate stuff. Oh, I can feel the wind now. Besides actually mucking up the report, the wind blowing into it there, and I've sort of had half experimented with putting devices on the microphone. Not to it. Okay, so just let's go back to the quantum physicist. I think the second one, I gave the general gist of what. There's sort of like quantum mechanical magic, you know, what quantum mechanics does, but I think it's just sitting around the place, quantum mechanical, and I began to talk about the thing that sits around the most place in our world is electrons. I gave you four handles in the quantum world, one is that small things are bigger, things are all soft, there's no surfaces on it, that soft blob can have twists in it, and the soft blob can lie through a blob, they can actually sit through in space. So basically everything you thought you knew from your childhood days of walking around as a toddler getting blocks and hitting mum in the head with a hammer and a block and stuff like that and crying and playing the sound, that's just not going to cut it for you, unfortunately. And you can take it or leave it, but you know, there's going to be probably an episode after this one where I start to delve into the incredible acrobatics of electrons and the solar cells and computers and all that type of stuff is an important thing. And then the episode after that, I expose the horrible lie that we tell our children about the Bohr electron, and tell you a bit about this Niels Bohr, this Danish person, very big, powerful soccer player, and I'm just really pleased he's no longer here, because he was big enough, he'd be big enough to come around and absolutely intimidate me, but he is really of a different era, of the mystic, philosophical person who can have a conjecture, and with conjecture you've got the philosophical nous to actually punch it through, and that sort of conjecture, which is based on medieval science of disappearing from one point and reappearing in the other, and where there's obviously faults in an argument, you can just say, oh, God did it. Well, in this case, not God, but you can call for the infallibility of the Pope. Oh, bloody hell. Oh, the Pope's infallible. I guess I've lost that argument. I guess everything I thought is actual fact wrong, and they're right by definition, that type of stuff. So there's this sort of crazy, crazy stuff of the classical electron, which is really small, and you have these people saying, yeah, you're mostly vacuum, you're mostly empty space, because between the proton and the electron in the atoms, there's just nothing. And of course, you know, what do you say? To your child, your children who have been educated, and other children who have just been told that in all earnest, and want to be marked correct for saying that back to you, and you say, well, look, you are correct in that you have correctly recited something that's incorrect. No, you don't say that to them. Well, in fact, I really hadn't bothered up to this site, and so I've had a rather private viewing of a the electron, and I'm hopefully going to tell you a little bit about it this time. It's sort of like Hoyt's opening up next to the National Gallery with Van Gogh and all these other things, the Renoir, you know, the great masters on one side, but no one turns up because they're all going to see the Disney animation of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs next door, and you know, you're in the gallery of nature pretty much by yourself, and I hope to invite you in to see it. Now, let's consider, you know, there is an atom, a favourite atom of mine, which is, when we get down to it, is just basically an electron held, pinned into space. That's helium. And you might say, oh, there's two electrons there. Well, yes, there are two electrons, but really those two electrons occupy different universes, the spin-up, spin-down universes, they superimpose, and really it's just one electron sitting, you know, trapped. Well, it's one electron, but another electron through it, trapped in space, sitting there. And there's, the helium's sort of like the perfect zen of an atom to think about how that's going together. So we'll visit that point in time. So if you're looking at matter, you can't go past helium, and it behaves quantum mechanically as you expect, absolute zero, and as it shrinks down, goes to lower energy. So something which is lower mass and lower energy grows bigger and bigger, and in fact, helium atom expands so big that you can actually see it very faintly under a microscope. In fact, that's called Bose condensate. That's when something goes so small, the laws of quantum mechanics really take over and it grows big. So you can actually see an individual, or an individual atom, which is composed of the wave function of billions of atoms, but it's one wave function down there under the microscope, and have a look at it. But let's stop. Let's think. And I'm just going to have a little tour of my favourite electrons. Now, one of the things I want to do is imagine yourself in deep space, as you do, and you're sitting there, and you look out your spacecraft window, and there, besides you, is an electron, and it's traveling very, very slowly. You're not charged, so it's got a charge, it's not flustered by anything, it's just sitting there. What does it look like? Well, it looks like a fuzzy ball. Like if you could touch it and sample it, it's a fuzzy ball. You can't actually pinch a little bit of it because it doesn't have parts. So like if you want to break a bit of wall off, the wall's got bricks and you can't pinch it, but it's a fuzzy ball. And if it slows down, it can slows down to, you know, a few millimeters per second, it'll probably be quite big. You could possibly see it at that size. I'm just walking past the shiny solar pole, and I'm seeing a whole lot of electrons just sitting still, just sitting there. So I'm going to pull at the moment. It's got full of those electrons. I can actually see those electrons. Now, for you, it may be very difficult to imagine all this because you've been beaten. It's sort of like a dog in which you've got a behavioural response. That is, you say you've got an enemy and you want their dog to attack it, you put a mask on which looks like the person and you start beating it with a stick so it learns to bark and attack back at that particular person. So you are probably conditioned to revolt against mechanics. But an individual electron will look something like this very fuzzy cloud, never quite finishing, but definitely dense at a particular point, its coordinates, origin, if you could imagine that. And if we go into sort of your textbooks and stuff like that, and you had to draw an electron, a free electron moving, you will draw it with a wavelength, a Rolle wavelength, and it will have a wavelength clicking up and down, sort of like if you can imagine a wave, a piece of corrugated roof. I don't know what we call it a corrugated iron roof. So around Australia, pretty well every property has got corrugated roofs on them. Our house for sure has it. And the old sheds, corrugated iron. You see this corrugation, you know, if you draw it, it's got a corrugation. And if you solve it for a free electron, a sheet of paper, it's a corrugation which stretches from one end of the paper to the other. And that's, initially when you first do quantum mechanics, you think that a free electron, sort of this electron that maybe if you imagine as a tennis ball bashed back and forth, it goes through space as corrugation. Now, I suppose, look, there's lots of things you can say about information theory, and that's something to imagine, but it's a corrugation. You can't draw it as a blob. It's a continuous corrugation. However, we know it is a blob, and how do you get it back to a blob? Well, what you do is you can make a square wave, something called Fourier transformation. You can make a square wave out of a whole series of infinitely long waves, infinite sine waves, which go forever, and they have you get a range of frequencies together, and for where the object is, they reinforce. Everywhere else in the wavelength, they unreinforce, and they have they're all those little different frequencies that come together, and the slight phase difference, speed, the sort of oscillation of the sound waves that comes through, it creates a pulse out of different frequencies. Now, often you might, if you hear someone singing, you might be able to look at something called the power spectrum of it. It says what frequencies are there. So, it says that if I give a sound which was to last forever, it would have the same power spectrum as a short pulse, but the short pulse, that's not quite right, is it? But the short pulse has phase information. So too with an electron. If it's moving, it has a series of energies that it's at. So the electrons, to move, it's got to have a distribution of energies within it, a distribution of frequencies in it, such that all those frequencies construct for it to be in a particular position. And as those frequencies shift or modulate within each other, that position moves along. So it's like a square wave on an oscilloscope. As it, as you change the phase of it, it slightly moves across. Now, what does that really practically mean? Well, it means a lot of really fascinating things. That means that, and you have to do a little bit of work to get this out. An electron, if it's standing still, becomes ball-like, ball-like, fuzzy and ball-like, with no surface on it. But if it moves, it becomes a bit more lozenge. This is a free electron, no atom, no charge, it's got no charges. There's no charges there, so no electric field. It moves along, and it becomes a more lozenge shape. So it starts to move, and it sort of extends, but its volume stays the same in phase space. We call it X, Y, Z phase. Its volume stays the same, and it becomes a bit thinner and smaller. And so the width of an electron, the girth of an electron, decreases as it becomes faster. So this has got a whole lot of interesting things. You can sieve out slow electrons with a sieve. That is, you can have electrodes, a little, you can have a grid of wires which repel, slightly negatively charged. So they're all the electrons are sitting there saying, bugger off. And they can actually turn back large electrons, and fast electrons can go through it. So this is a basic electron energy spectrometer. It's a sieve. You can sieve out fast electrons. And what's more, you can get an electron and you can make it go faster and faster and thinner and smaller. So as it goes faster, it goes longer and goes smaller. And this is one of the things with an electron microscope. An electron microscope works because you can dial up thinner and tinier electrons. this is true. So a so many 1,000 volt electron microscope has a certain resolution. You can increase the resolution ever more by increasing the energy of the electrons going out. Now, unfortunately, this means sort of two things. One is that that electron, when it stops in your target to go out, so you can make a smaller and smaller dot with a greater and greater speed. And the only reason that is because the electrons quantum mechanically get smaller and smaller. Yeah, that's a fact. You can look up electron microscopes and that type of stuff. Now, the electrons going big and stuff like that is great because it these stationary electrons are so big, they all clump together and determine the size of atoms, which determines the density of the Earth. It's all over Red Rover. Go through that. Now I'm just trying to think. So this is one of the things. Now, so as the electrons becomes longer, it's in terms of it's got higher energy, but the time that it actually interacts over a longer time. So what happens is that you gain spatial resolution, you lose time resolution to go through it, and those electrons. Now, what happens is that when you solve the problem for one energy of a free electron, you don't get its position at all, and you get a wave, sort of wavelets in it. So it's like a long lozenge, and when you just do the first calculation for one energy, the electron, it turns out if you have a very finely tuned energy, you can't tell the time because it's such a long electron. But the actual electron in real life, if you were to look at it, you wouldn't be able to see the ripples in it because it's not made out of one frequency. It's made up of enough frequencies such that it will look, we can't see it existence going past because it's more the sort of phases along it. Now, this sort of is rather good because all of this, and I'll have to unpack it, there is this huge, hugely important thing about frame of references. So Einstein has said that frame of reference your physics should work in all frames of references. It's sort of a way of saying that your thinking, your general solution has to be frame of reference proof. And that has got a lot of implications for our poor old electrons. That's for another episode. But it means that if I whip past a standard electron at high speed, it becomes longer and longer. It's quite an amazing stuff. Now, one of the things is that these three electrons are in your old cathode ray tube. This is the stuff of many a syllabus question, although people are now stretching to remember what one is. They may have seen it in the garbage a few years ago, but and in piles of electron waste, but what happens is that these electrons are fired, free electrons are fired, and they live for a short while, and they smash against the phosphor of your screen, and they can be accelerated to very high speeds, fraction of the speed of light, and they actually, instead of the energy going into kinetic energy, it goes into mass energy, and there's sort of this frame that the electrons pick up mass, and it's a way of certain things. So there's this special relativity, and that area of science adds on to your beautiful little Schrödinger wave equation. I promise that I wouldn't include anything into it. Now, that's one thing, but you can get your TV electron, and you can really make it super massive by accelerating it longer and longer in a ring. And so what happens is that it's like these mad parents are on one of those merry-go-rounds, and every time a handle goes around, it pushes it. And so they can see an electron coming, and when it comes to it, comes up to a plate, it's positive. And when it's through the plate, it's positive again on the opposite side. It flips the polarity of this plate. So it's pulling and pushing. Electron can go up to a good fraction of the speed of light. And as you can guess, the electron becomes longer. Right, get your mind around this. And then you can tie the electron in a knot. I'm not joking, this is absolutely true. You can get a single electron, make it extremely long, a single electron by itself, make it extremely long, tie it through a knot, a magnetic field knot, so this is called a wiggler, and as it tries to straighten out, it will not only emit light, but it will emit light from different parts of the same electron, so one electron, so it's got to be the same electron, and it will produce light radiation. So remember that light, I said, was how you twist and untwist an electron. So I can mechanically twist an electron by forcing it to go through magnets. I can lengthen it by speeding it up. I can twist it. And that, my friends, is called a synchrotron or free electron laser. So an electron doesn't have to have an atom with it. It can be by itself. And when the electron twists and pulls out and you're pulling it through, so this poor little thing, and where does the energy come from? Well, it comes from its speed. It emits a photon forward, which recoils backwards, so it loses some of its speed and energy going through. And so it fires off these electrons, a laser beam, to break it. You know, isn't that amazing? And of course, if you don't think that's fantastic, I think there's good on something like 400 of these free electron lasers sitting in major cities around the world, including one in Melbourne, Australia. And it is the laser of choice. It can produce a very bright UV laser point wherever we want, and we can use that to do heaps and heaps of science with this UV light. It's just an amazing device. Now, do people know about it? No. Does it make it wrong? Well, several things. I think it goes two ways. For, dare I say, teachers, people who are sort of stick in the mud, it's wrong because we haven't told it to them. It's wrong, i.e. it's unfair. But you're welcome to look up synchrotron in the internet, and you're welcome to go out and drive and see one, and you're welcome to walk up to people working there, using it every day, and explain to them that what they're doing is wrong and can't work. And they will say, thank you very much, I've got some work to do. But if you want to come back and really understand it, come back when you've perhaps listen to enough episodes on quantum mechanics to come through. So that's synchrotron radiation. Now, there's, I suppose one of the things I want to say, I can't really tell you that you have to add a bit of Einstein's special relativity to quantum physics to get something called spin, spin up, spin down, antiparticles, all through quantum mechanics, all courtesy of it. You got to accept that for every electron I can imagine, there's actually more dimensions to the space than you can see. Mm-hmm. There's another dimension in space. There's up, sort of up, down, left, right, back, forward, spin up, spin down. Bloody hell, there's six sort of dimensions, and they're the most simple dimensions that you can talk about. And basically it gives another, so we've got a universe, and thank goodness we've got a second universe which sits straight through our initial universe of a spin-up, spin-down universe. And complainers that you might, go just have a look at a helium atom, and the first electron is that fuzzy ball which you see, you've seen outside your spacecraft, but this time it's pulled in a little bit by a nucleus. It's sort of sucked in. It's moving. Oh, it's one of these fantastic things. It's the curvature of that space is it's the rate at which it the differential of the wave function is its momentum, and because it's got a slope up and a slope down, it means that although the electron isn't moving, it can't be moving because it's got no parts, because it's so small, but yeah, you can imagine it as continuously falling forever into the atom, the nucleus. It is falling and has landed through, actually travels through the nucleus. So your nucleus is there, it's imagined as the ball. And the highest density of electron, okay, it's not in the density of electron we think of its part, but it's most likely ishness existence. It exists mostly inside the nucleus. Now, obviously, if I were to explain it in class, and that person would complain to a parent who would complain to another teacher who would say, rubbish. But, you know, it's true. The electron wave function goes right through the nucleus. It's a different quantum number, and each electron, they spin up and spin down, go through each other. And so you have this system that the helium thing is the most quantum mechanically perfect atom. It's got one spin up electron that eases in and out without twisting, without a nodal line in it. And then it's got the second electron which is spin down, goes through it. And then it's got a proton, spin up, spin down. So the proton is all centered, and the neutrons spin up, spin down. So the absolute location of every particle in a ground state helium is centered at, it's got its home address, like if you're 8 Wongle Street, Wadera, in Western Australia, whatever that is, it's got a home address of 000 in three dimensions, everything's centered. And so you've got this beautiful thing of, we've got the concept of motion, but no, we've got the concept and the name and the concepts associated with motion, except if we look at it, it doesn't move. How's that? We've got a concept of spin, but if we look at it, we can't put a marker on it. It doesn't spin. And so that's your helium is your prime example of an atom. And it's got balanced spin zero. So it each helium can superimpose upon itself. So as you cool helium down, each helium atom begins to sit directly on top of each other, through each other. And so what happens is that when you cool liquid helium, cool it right down, it grows in size and condenses. It goes through each other in space. That's a Bose-Einstein condensate to go with it. So that's your joy of helium. So, you know, my favourite ones. I just want to sort of go out a little bit. Obviously, if you go higher up. You can't put another electron into onto a helium. You can, but you've got to actually put a twist through it. And as you twist the helium, you punch it through space, and although it looks as though it's twisted like like a pretzel or something like that, it's a little bit, it's just a touch more complex than that. And when I say it's complex for that, you need complex numbers to explain it, to say it's phase. So we can imagine it, but we have to square it to go into the real world. And so what a phase means is, in its root, it can have positive and negative roots of us. Just bear with me. And so as you twist it, as you put a twist in it, you consign one part to be the opposite existence phase to the other part. I know that doesn't quite make sense, but that is, we sort of express this in colours. So we can draw a picture of these wave functions, and often people, just to keep people happy, show them monochromatic. But the best way we can do is express that fourth number as a colour, and as a rainbow of colours, if you want to go between, if we say that blue is one and red is minus one, we can arrange the rainbow such that, I suppose, yellow would be naught and stuff like that. However, in a single electron that's twisted, we can, relative to the each other in space, it's either plus or minus one, blue, generally blue or red. And so as I twist it, and see a picture of it, that electron will look, I think it's generally blue and red, blue and yellow. Red's a bit sort of too hard on the eye, in actual fact, so potentially yellow. And if you want to see this type of thing, go to dynamic periodic table and press something called dynamicperiodictable.com and press something called orbitals, and you'll suddenly start to see, if you type into Google electron orbitals, and you'll suddenly start to see what I'm talking about, this thing which has been folded. Now you can fold it two ways. You can fold it as you imagine a pizza dough person, that is, you run your pizza cutter through it and do a twist on it. You can see that in bulbs. And there's another way of twisting it. Electrons are fantastic, you can go into space and twist it in a sphere such that it goes in, and then the inner sphere's been twisted opposite. And this is the positive and negative phase. And if you're into it, and I'm definitely into it, you can have hours of fun just letting your brain tick over. It's sort of really basically absent-minded, and the back of your brain sort of pick out wave functions for it. Now, there's maths behind the wave functions. Okay, lots of cute electron shapes which fold through each other, and it's got all these geometries to do your head in, basically. It's sort of the things which can knot through each other. Now, there is an electron, so you can think of basically any electron you'd like. Really, I think there's really no limit to what electron shape you can get. I mean, there's sort of laws of physics that there's certain things you can't do, but there's a lot of things you can do, and you can think it up. And basically, if you don't, the main thing is not to try too hard, or like the moment you go down trying to write an equation, you're dead. You basically got to angel pile yourself through. So this is a piece of software called Orbital Viewer. So it allows you to master craft your own electron. Yeah, Orbital Viewer does things. Orbital Viewer is, on one aspect, great. On another aspect, horrible because it masquerades the horrible Copenhagen school of the electron being these tiny dots that sort of like and so are the simulations which don't resort to give the thing the dots, you know, that the electron's got a lower density, but that lower density is actually coalesced in a little point in space. So it's lower density, it's sort of like lower density of your shell glass, and the glass is still a little particle size, and it goes further out, and so there's, it goes further out on the floor, so there's a large amount of the floor, and only a little spot is the full density. I don't know where they get that from. It's more like a smell, a fart, so to speak, where the smell goes out uniformly. You can't sort of stick your nose and suddenly get a full smell and a little move your nose across and not get it. So that's the point. But look, can I say I really can't remember it, and I've probably lost it. And where you can actually build an electron wave function which looks like a nappy and two little legs, and you can actually get the legs to sort of move a little bit inside. And this is by selecting a whole heap of orbitals. You can select which direction it goes by the magnetic spin number, which is sort of the amount, and you can make the nappy yellow and the little smurf, baby truncated smurf, just get the nappy and this little bulby legs as you go through it, and you have to, I don't know, select it, and it's just sort of, I don't know. I was never going to share that with anyone. I was never going to share quantum mechanics with people. I suppose 2 years ago, I was sort of struggling to breathe, and I'm going, you know, there's a few things in life I really appreciated, and understanding a bit of astrophysics, sort of understanding quantum physics, and yeah, not now. I wouldn't have shared it with anyone, but it was a little more cosmic that no one wanted to know. So that's sort of interesting. So look, that sort of thing. If you have played with quantum wave functions of electrons, the thing to bring tears to your eyes is to look at the wave functions operating in proteins of life molecules, and to see it come to life. And if I can get you to watch another, if you want to watch quantum wave functions inside you doing things, go to Google, go to YouTube, and type inner life of the cell, or of cells. So it's inner life of cells, Boston Infographics, look, and there's an Australian person, can't remember, Walter Eliza, he just destroys that, but seeing that is fantastic, and you suddenly see, by these wave functions which are constricted to move and rotate in certain directions, that life constructs these wave functions to make little nanobots inside your body, and the quantum mechanics bursts into life, and inside your cells are little quantum mechanical nanorobots which go around the cell, walking up highways inside the cell, physically grabbing bits and pieces and physically assembling them, a bit like the dwarves going off to work each day, and they walk down these highways, these I think they're called actin filaments. They're cell filaments, cell skeletons, all this type of stuff. Now, that's a big, you know, when you look at it in the big picture, the price we pay to let uneducated teachers draw a circle on the board with the dot in the center and say, this may not be true, but this is what you need. This is the belief system you have to have to get a job. You have to kill your curiosity, not look anywhere else, but do this. And when they draw the circle and the dot, I just have to say, that's what Pythagoras did, 700 BC. He went on the sand and he drew a circle and a dot and he said, that's called a monad. This monad thing is the symbol of knowledge. It's been the symbol of reductive, rational, pre-mathematical knowledge as the monad. And it is this sort of spooky thing that these teachers draw a dot and a circle around it and say, that's, my friend, is an atom. And the history of it goes into the you know, it's sort of like this crowded, you know, all this cacophony of mistakes are going in your head. And the people, sort of like at a H.G. Wells time machine thriller where they hear the siren and they go off to be killed and eaten or something, whatever it is, they go off and say, I'm not interested in quantum mechanics inside me and how my cell, how I exist as a quantum mechanical function, you know, the pi orbitals, short acting splints on molecules and, electrons being whizzed back and forth to capture, protons to be hydrogen bombs. I'm just not interested in that because they've told me that I can't eat, I can't get food, I can't survive, I can't find a mate unless I go out and draw the monad. Sorry, and guess what? I've also been trained to mimic the people around, which put new ideas down, and I'm going to be closed. But hopefully you're listening to this and getting up. And so, yeah, talk about favourite electrons. I've got all going out. Now, the idea of electrons going through each other, and so one electron can occupy a whole molecule. You know, there's such a thing as a molecular electron, a molecular bond. It's a molecular electron. It's not located at one atom. It's not of one atom. It's not shared between the two atoms. It's coating between the two atoms. And then in carbon, you get rings of six and graphite, you've got the electrons delocalized. That is, they're not localized. You've got these sheets of electrons. And so the electron is as big as a sheet in graphite. So the electrons travel above and below. And, however, in the middle, it's different. The electrons travel throughout the entire, they don't travel throughout, they exist through, their wave function spreads throughout the entire metal, definitely over the crystal. And so if you look at metal, that is really a gigantic, a single crystal of a metal is really a huge, unbelievably big atom. See, it can be modeled as an unbelievably big atom where the nucleus has been split and pulled apart and held apart. So you can imagine a huge atom with one nucleus and all those electrons and very large, or that nucleus has been spread apart and each electron is the size of that crystal. Now, this is true. So, I don't know what happens. I really don't know what happens. How can you read a solid-state physics book? How can you do solid-state physics? How can you do electronics without realizing it? You can by the miracle of bashing people in the head with this Drude models and the simplicity. And people say they understand, but there's no way they can understand what happens. So if you sort of like if this car driving past it, if you couldn't see roadways and you couldn't see cars and you believed everyone had to walk, and all of a sudden three or four houses got robbed at once across a 50 kilometer strip, and you would say they've got robbed, they've done it, but I've got no real explanation how they got there. And so this is also true for the quantum physics of an electron. So the electron actually expands to the size of the whole metal. So when you look at a tiny piece of metal, you are looking at big electrons, the big electrons, and they're so big they become really faint, but because they exist each other through space, they float through each other in space, so enough of them, billions of them, through each other look silvery. And they're silvery simply because they respond to light by regenerating light again. So I suppose it requires an understanding of what light is, but one could say that light goes into a metal and the metal produces light. Now it is, it's sort of slightly different to a ball hitting a surface and bouncing off. What happens is that the ball goes into the wall chews it around, thinks about it, and manufactures a new ball and throws it out. See, that's fundamentally different. Now, the thing about and this is the great thing about electrons, my favourite electrons, is that each electron has to be different from the previous electron, so they build up. And there's so much chemistry. I will wait to teach chemistry from quantum physics viewpoint, but I'm going to teach a little bit of solid state, because the point I want to end at is you're listening to a computer and you are listening to things in which the lid has been lifted on these electrons and allowing them to flow through. And it's not trying to lift the lid on something and the electrons are little flies and for some reason they go, oh, we're not escaping now. You're lifting the lid in such a way that an electron can get through your computer and through, and the mechanical lid is actually quite large because the electron is quite large and can operate that way. And it operates in a mathematical space which is not an X, Y, Z space. It's a momentum space. It's a shape space, right? So the dimension is the twistiness of it. And so we've left the X, Y, Z. So electrons obviously do travel through it, but they can't travel because they can't change the shape. So we have a shape gate in computers. I'm not kidding about this. Electrons don't appear to travel. That's because they can't travel because they can't. We don't allow them to change shape. So in order to move from point A to point B, they have to change shape. And we have this way of putting the electric field on them in a particular situation where their progress is denied. They can't change shape. So I'm just going to go back to a situation. I was in third year university. Was it? Yeah. Possibly second year university. And they were explaining to us what a transistor was. And we got sort of a very mechanical view of it in terms of it's a current amplifier. Yeah, what that? Oh, what the bloody hell. A current amplifier, that is, so many milliamps of current leads to so many So microamps of current leads to so many milliamps of current that's through. It is current amplifier. That's what it is mechanically. So basically, a lever is a force multiplier or something like that. This is a current amplifier and this method of going across it. So basically, regardless of the voltage, you get a constant current through it. More or less, okay. I put 12 volts across a transistor or 3 volts across over the transistor. It's going to produce 1 milliamp. But if I double the microamps into it, it'll produce 2 milliamps, regardless of the voltage. It's a voltage-independent current source. I don't know why they can't bloody well say that. However, the explanation was given as electrons as little particles trying to travel through a depletion layer and the depletion, and they couldn't explain it. In fact, they couldn't explain solar cells. Yet we had to sit exams, write exams, and people who didn't understand it. Okay, these are people back in the 80s, that's very forgivable, couldn't understand it, were testing on us, and you could only be left with the impression that so-and-so got a good mark, he doesn't understand it, he's got it wrong, he's got a good mark, I'm really, really confused. And so it's only after years and years of sticking at it, you know, most people went off and had a life, I sort of got stuck there, so, what's going on here? Yeah, it's sort of that after exam thing going across. It wasn't until I actually understood that electrons weren't as that, so bit by bit, the construct which made me feel stupid, I took apart, not because I was angry, but it just fell apart. And so electrons are big and they can't change shape and therefore it can be held. And so these electrons can't be held straight. Now where's this lid going across is electrons have got a shape, and when that shape is just the right frequency of ripples in it, twists in it, which equals the shape of the protons or the nuclei in the crystal. If the crystal's got an order and the electron has an order, that electron can actually be really enhanced. It can get additional energy because it's just every time it's going, I've hit a nucleus, I am happy, I'm really happy. And so what happens is that there is a thing, I'm really happy, and then if you were to just tweak it in energy a little bit, it's going, what's going on? I can't go up to that next state. That next state is there. The next state means that it goes and misses in the wrong place. It just gets really out of sort. So it's sort of like singing in a choir. Like when you're trying to keep beat, you're an old bastard trying to keep beat for the team thing, and you start beeping along and you start knowing you're out of sort and stop clapping for a while. And this energy gap means that electrons just can't move along with the electric field. The electric field is just sort of like the electric field is providing a little gentle slope for it to everything to mosey along. The electric field is no longer good enough because it needs its this next move up is this change of shape. So these massive electrons, the symmetry of the electrons and the symmetry of the crystal conspire to put a shape lid on the electrons, which means that they can't move. And what you can do is that you can tweak this ever so much and create a path for those electrons to move again. Now, there's a whole thing about Fermi surfaces that I start off with my base electron, which is just nothing at the edge, maximum at the middle of the crystal, and nothing at the edge again. That's one electron. My second electron, nothing at the edge, builds up a bit, nothing in the center, builds up again. And there's a situation power that happens. And so that goes up. And each new electron you add adds to it. So if you have just enough electrons added that it actually goes up against this lid, you can actually put a lid on the conduction of a metal and create a semiconductor. Now, again, the textbooks that we teach our kids are just absolute madness, and they don't understand indirect band gaps, which I'll get into, and they don't understand semi-metals and stuff like that. But therein goes the joy of quantum mechanics, the joy of electrons, the ability to sort of feel your way around electron microscopes, feel your way around electron lasers. Now, for a lot of people, free electron lasers don't exist. Problem solved. I can go on. Sorry for disturbing you. You're obviously bullying someone else who might be starting to learn something. Go off. Go. Continue to do it. There's free electron lasers. Then there's the molecules. The joy of those molecules and quantum mechanics. Just putting a spring in your step. Yeah, that you may be having a snooze, and inside you, running along inside each cell, are hundreds of these little nanobots. These basically, you know, have you ever seen Waltz and Gromit in the Wrong Trousers? These wrong trousers pulling sacks of stuff around your cell, yeah, and they're just, you know, this is, you may not be working, but your heart is moving, and these, basically your muscle is quantum mechanical nanobots, which are walking up ladders. What happens is calcium hits out, the rungs go along, and they all run towards each other, because we're stuck, and then there's another muscle, then they put their legs off, and another muscle pulls it out again. And that happens over and over again inside you. So you've got that. Then you've got your, I suppose, the joy of just sitting back and enjoying a bit of quantum mechanics and stuff like that. Once you break free of the curse of Carlsberg, it's you know, it's a great thing to do. Now, but there is more. There is, I speak of a big atom. I speak of a big atom with billions of protons and billions of neutrons, except that it's so big, they're all spread out. And if I spread them out just perfectly in a crystal, I can create a shape lid. And it's shape mathematics which is at work here. And although there's physical dimensions which we can possibly imagine working, the actual understanding of how it works goes on that. And I suppose the ultimate thing is you're listening to this courtesy of a fair amount of band gaps and electrons, semiconductors all storing information, doing all it all it went down to the first semiconductor, came to this little Russian scientist who was making a rectifier, you know, which is a diode out of silicon carbide, and it was, they began to know that about, we began to say, oh look, these crystals, if we put a pin on these crystals, we can create these band gaps and make diodes and stuff like that. you know, they sort of, they knew this before World War, after World War One, but before World War Two, they began to get crystal radio sets and, you know, began to start to do, and then we taught it to do what, you know, began to get it to, you know, build a circuit which controlled the circuit, and, you know, we've got computers and now you're listening to it. But it's all really basics of, gatekeeping the shape, putting a shape gate for electrons to go through, and that's what stops them and makes this fabulous world. And, you know, I suppose we've got two things to profoundly think about, or for me, or if you've heard this about electrons for the first time, I'm pleased for you. But, you know, even today, talking about it, I've got this sort of profound sense, and I suppose I've got a heightened profound sense because I wasn't going to be here about 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I had a booking at the local cemetery, and so I've got this sort of strange feeling about, oh, I've got this knowledge, I'll just leave this poor girl in the car park so she's not spooked out by me. And this old man walking past in his trachydacs and a moose head, quite literally a moose head beanie on, and I have to wear it because I don't have any hair or much hair left, so it's just, you know, I'd be a scary sight, poor thing. Okay, there's that. So I've got this profound feeling of, I've had a bit of a chance to, you know, and I've sort of had my math circuits knocked out of me, and I still can't do the high-powered maths easy. Yeah, it's like, oh, I don't know. I just find it exhausting. However, I can actually work out sort of what the diagrams meant and how they related. So I suppose it's good in a way of being knocked back for a while. The other thing which just grabs me is, you know, what's everyone fussing about? Why are they so busy getting people to do unproductive things? And so I suppose the most unproductive thing is non-constructive competition. That's unproductive. So you laugh when your competitor goes out of business and you've got all this capital investment being just ploughed back in. Yeah, I think that's aspect. We spend a lot of the time taking down people who are interested in finding out things, and that to me sounds a very unproductive. You know, who's the winner? I mean, what's the artistic value for the person, a group of people? They really don't appreciate a whole lot of things, and they are not really getting the full benefit of appreciation of taking one down. But then the sort of vast idea of so many classrooms, thousands of students, thousands of teachers who are just too busy to actually get into it, and they feel it's sort of like some bizarre dystopian science fiction where people are just taught. Now, this has been said, we have taught a whole lot of fictional things to our kids and ourselves, partly because we need fear and uncertainty to keep people within the fold. But I do think this need to keep people in the fold. We wanted to keep people in the fold so they didn't go off and form a competition group. They didn't go off into another group. They felt that, you know, the outside world was uncertain and he was certain, and they'd been put off with, basically been ripped off. Essentially, you have got a situation where two people go out and work. One person owns the resources, the other one doesn't. And so the person who owns the resource gets all the surplus, and the person who doesn't is always in need. So the situation goes on. So part of that situation is you know, rationally, if someone said back, oh, that's no good, I'm not going to do it, it would all fall apart. So you've got to have multiple points of ignorance to keep someone ignorant and coming back for more. And, you know, a simple, straightforward explanation is not what we need. But look, I think the times are changing. I think software visualization, there is this fundamental thing with quantum mechanics, is that the maths is that much level up. You know, in school, I think we're in year seven, your first year of high school, you may have got your hands on some of these advanced books, maths books, and saying, oh, what the heck? How will they ever understand it? Now, my only thing to understand is that you don't really have to understand it all that much. You just have to connect the explanation with the experience. I hope my explanation got across the idea that there is an explanation out there of how computers work. There is an explanation of how you work and how things work. There is something that's really the first step. And then you mightn't understand it. However, there's nothing like astounding proof of something to explain. So, you know, like if I was explaining the sun to a world who's always been in total darkness, everyone would go, yeah, well, who needs it? What's the value of it? And stuff like that. However, if you are in a sunny country and you start to describe the sun, you say, oh, well, it causes UV radiation, plants to grow, skin cancer, all these types of things, water to evaporate. Everyone says, yeah, I can see it. You know, there's sort of like this knowledge of what's going on. So I'm just doing the worst thing for podcasts, which is filling in at the end. So I assume people have switched off once they've got their feel, their feel for it. But look, there is a little bit more. So there's this, you know, this world of darkness where no one's actually ever explains quantum mechanics. But there is a little bit more than the, there's these obvious things like why, like quantum mechanics answers the fundamental question is why does this mouse pad, I assume you've got a mouse, you've got a computer there, or why does this chair have bulk? It really answers that, and it answers a whole lot of other questions. But besides answering those questions, it opens up this world of sheer joy, can I say? So I was just looking there, and I was looking at a sodium lamp, and so I sort of kind of have got a good idea how, a little few steps behind it, about how it's yellow. Not the fact that I don't have to go and rote learn it's yellow. Or I look up at the sky at night, and so I'm in a different space. Can't say, well, yeah, I'm literally, when Star Wars movie opens, and they show you the star field, and all the stars are blue-grey, and you go, that's not a galaxy, that's not real, that's not a space. It sort of puts you, it alienates you, because you know stars are red and blue and violet and white and yellow and red and deep red, and you know it's there. So it sort of really is sort of like this, like, you know how people go on about wines, you know, oh, this is a great wine, I can't do it, because I'm nothing like that. I'm just a complete, what we call in Australia, a bogan, someone who's just got the most crude taste possible. However, on that, there's no such thing as a green star, because putting it through, essentially, Planck's equation, the star equation, is the source of quantum mechanics. The Planck's constant came from looking at a black body radiator, which is basically a star, and explaining why stars radiated in a certain distribution, a certain weight. And the one thing is that a star cannot be green. There's no such thing as a green star. So it's really that all comes into it. So your sort of issue journey will be several steps ahead. I suppose it's unfortunate for me in terms of that I've basically got every zombie loony possible I could possibly imagine coming out to get in the way. But, you know, that the happiness is there. So what happened there is that at this podcast conference, I'm just coming up to my house, so I may as well finish this off, podcast conference, they said, what are you doing? I didn't want to say, look, I'm a total loser. I'm just podcasting just to get on top. And I said, I didn't think anyone would know. I'm quantum physics, and I like to podcast a bit in that direction. And people said, opposite. So, Mrs. Absolutely fantastic in this field. I'm really have done the best of the best. And I picked up the basics of podcasting, that is to have a beginning and end, try and have some sort of episode structure, and what you're doing is just chucking it out there, getting off, chucking it out there, clearing the deck, which is exactly what I'm trying to do, and you will never be successful, which is again what is evidently true, except I'm not successful in a research way of not being successful. So if you look at researchers, they're failure artists. So most of what a researcher does is fail, but at the end, win. So you've got 90% failure, and that 10% win is a 10% win, whereas most people have no failure and no win. And so, yeah, that's exactly what I'll do. I'll go off and have a good old fail, seeking, and your failure is like you're swimming through combination solution space. It's sort of just what happens to get there. Okay, well, that's the end of this podcast. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see how it goes.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.